In this session, we're going to start out with talking about the new image sizes and speed. So I want to compare Windows 7 images to Windows 8, and then Windows 8 to 8.1. We'll talk about some of the core deployment tools, what's new with those, and look at the difference between the Windows Automated Installation Kit and the Windows Assessment and Deployment Kit. Then we're going to break that down and go into a lot more detail on what's new in the Windows ADK, starting with WinPE 5.0. We'll talk about what you get in WinPE 5.0. And then if you're not familiar with WinPE 4.0, I'm going to tell you some things we got back then as well, because there's some cool stuff in there. We'll talk about versions of the User State Migration Tool. If you're not familiar with USMT, this is the tool that allows you to capture users' data and settings, application settings as well, put those on a server during a deployment, wipe the machine clean, and then use USMT load state to grab it and pull it right back down after you've loaded up the OS. USMT, lots of fun. Now, I always have to ask this because it's such a difficult tool to learn. Who's played with USMT manually? One person. One, two, three. Yeah, and a couple of them, it's like, yeah, I did that. It's not an easy tool to figure out. There are a lot of rules you have to learn, and there are a lot of exceptions to those rules. So there's tons of switches. Some switches, if you use one switch, there are four others you have to add to it. Some switches can't be used together. So you have to really dig into all the switches that you can use, figure out which ones can be used, which ones can't be used together, and then you have to go through the exception rules. One of the funnest things that I think people don't know is with USMT, it works off of these XML files that tells it what to go get. The data it looks for is based on the extension of the data. So what if you don't want it to capture certain extensions of data? You don't want MP3s coming across. Or you want to add something to it. You can create your own XML file that controls what USMT does. And you would just run scan state with the gen config and then tell it what you want to name the XML file that gets created. Usually we just stick with the default config.xml. Now you can open that XML and go through and tell it. Each line is going to tell it what setting or what type of data to gather. What a lot of people do is they think that if they delete a line out of the config.xml, it's the same thing as saying, don't do that. Setting it to no and deleting the line is not the same thing at all. In fact, if you delete the line instead of telling it, no, don't get that information, it will get the information because it's actually looking at underlying XML files, the MIG docs, MIG user, and MIG apps. So you want to make sure with USMT, you know what you're getting and confirm it. So I'll talk a little bit more about USMT later on and why it's much better than it used to be. We'll talk a little bit about the performance toolkit, the assessment tools. Have you ever had a machine that's just misbehaving? It takes 15 minutes for this one machine to boot. I can't figure out what's happening on it. Well, how can you tell what's going on during the boot sequence? You can't get logged onto it to see anything. Does anybody remember an old tool called BootViz? One, two people. I love that tool. You can't find it anymore. It's been gone for years. But that was a tool that could measure what happens during the boot up, the whole performance. Now we've got the performance toolkit that can measure it. So you would set a machine and tell it, you know what, I want to see what's happening during the boot sequence. It says, okay, fine. So then it has to restart. Restarts and it takes measurements. In fact, it'll do it three times by default just to kind of go out there and make sure the measurements are accurate. Then it dumps all this information at you. And you're looking at this trying to figure out, what is this information? Talk about a learning curve. It takes forever to figure out what this information is. It's a lot of data that it throws at you. So what I like to do is cheat. I don't have time to go learn all that. So I'll do the exact same thing on a working machine. I get that data. It's displayed in all these nice little bar graphs. So I've got the good machine, got the bad machine. I just compare the pictures. That's all I do. I look at them. I'm like, okay, this guy is taking forever to get his group policies. That's the problem. So why is he having a problem getting group policies? And then I can start troubleshooting down that line. So you don't have to be an expert with these tools to use them. We're going to talk a little bit about BitLocker, what's new to BitLocker, and some cool stuff with UEFI. Who started playing around with UEFI? Out of those people, who started playing around with UEFI and then disabled it? I had some people who came up and told me after the last session, yep, couple hands. Yeah, UEFI is great. It's fantastic. But it also breaks things. So you might want to know some information about how UEFI Secure Boot might not allow the machine to pixie boot in certain scenarios. So we'll talk about that. And then we'll talk a little bit about the tools, MDT, Microsoft Deployment Toolkit, one of my favorite tools, version 2013, that's the latest and greatest, and SDCM 2012 R2. So starting, Windows image size and the amount of time it takes to deploy those images. A Windows 7, we found a typical image size is about 1.97 gigs. Installation time takes about 15 minutes. Upgrade time from Vista. Who did Vista? Anybody out there install Vista? I had one client that did it. So we had like two people, I think, that had Vista. You know, I ran Vista on my laptop, 64-bit, and I never had a problem with it. It was slow, but I didn't think it was a horrible OS compared to the bad reputation it got. But if you upgrade from Vista, it only takes about 30 minutes. Moving on to Windows 8, image size, compressed. It's 1.96 gigs. Installation time takes about 10 minutes. If you upgrade from Windows 7, it's about 20 minutes, so we're getting a little bit faster here. Windows 8.1, image size is around 2.13 gigs, compressed. Installation time, less than 10 minutes. Upgrade time from Windows 8, less than 20 minutes. So the operating systems are getting faster and faster for installation and upgrade times. As far as the size of the image goes, when you're talking about deploying these images, that's not really a big deal. I see it's very common to have an image between 8 and 15 gigs in size, depending on how much you put in the image. Because at the end of the day, all that's happening during deployment is you're copying the image to the local machine. It's just a file copy now. So it doesn't really matter the size. Refresh and update scenarios. So we have different terms that are used. And the reason that they're using these terms are because that's what's used in the scripts, the underlying scripts of the tools for MDT and Config Manager. If you've ever ran ZTI Gather, there's a VB script out there that it's run repeatedly in task sequences. Both MDT and Config Manager use this. It runs ZTI Gather, generates a log file. That log file will tell you if it's a new computer, because it didn't find a Windows folder, there's no operating system on it, or is it a refresh scenario? It found an operating system. So in the refresh scenario, you would take the user's data, put it on a server somewhere, format the machine. I like to format in between OSs. A lot of people don't. And then, once you've got the new OS on it, you can bring the data and put it back down on the machine again. That's a refresh scenario. Compare that to a replace. A replace scenario is you're actually going to replace that physical device. So you have an old machine. You've got user's data on it. You've got to put that someplace because you're going to take this computer and toss it out. Throwing that away, not going to use it anymore. Then you're going to get a brand new machine, bare metal, and you're going to put the OS on it and then grab the user's data and settings and pull that back down to the new machine. That's a replace. And the reason I'm telling you about refresh, new computer, and replace is because that's what you'll see as the deployment type in the ZTI Gather log. And the scripts that run key off of what tasks should I run in a task sequence based on what deployment type I found in the ZTI Gather.log. You guys can key off of that information to automate and customize your deployments as well. In fact, you can tell ZTI Gather to run anytime you want in a task sequence. If you haven't seen this, let me just show you what I'm talking about with the ZTI Gather. It looks the same in MDT task sequences as it does in Config Manager. So I'll just open up one of the MDTs. Don't want to check for updates. This is just a default client task sequence. And if we look in here, the first thing it does is a gather. And it does it repeatedly throughout the task sequence. There are multiple times that it has to rebuild that log file because the deployment will clean up after itself and delete things as it gets to certain phases of the installation. So the nice thing that you can do with this ETI gather log is, see if I've run it on this machine. If I go to the C drive, I'm going to delete that, pretend you didn't see it. Then we'll pop out to the E drive, go into one of my deployment shares, the scripts folder, grab ZTI gather, and we run it. And nothing happens, right? Oh, something happened. Go back to that C drive. You get the mini NT folder. And the reason I'm showing you this is because when you get new models of machines in, the first thing I do is run ZTI gather on it. Grab that log, I put that in my documentation book. Because I can key off of information in that based on that model of machine and the information it gave me. To get the log, just drill down, SMS OSD, OSD logs, here's my ZTI gather log. And the nice tool I'm using to open this log file is CMTrace. That's one of my favorite tools. That network monitor. Couldn't get through a day without them. So what you can look at here is all kinds of information about this machine. We can find out, is it a server operating system? We can look at asset tag information, serial number information, IP address, you don't really want to key off that, but you might want to key off the MAC address. We'll find some interesting information down here. How about the make of the machine? Or the model of machine? I don't know how many times I've walked into someone's deployment environment and taken a look at what they've done with their custom settings INI. That's one of the files that drives your deployments for MDT as well as Config Manager. So a lot of times they'll look at the sticker on the machine to get the model number. And then they go into the custom settings INI and they type in what they found on the sticker. Well, that's not the model number internally at all most of the time. Model numbers are crazy with the information they put in them. And there's a lot of periods you have to put in the exact right place, commas that have to be in the exact right place. I say don't even type it. Run a ZTI gather on it, and then you can just copy and paste it directly into your custom settings INI. So one of the nice things you can do is to automate the different models of machines, the drivers that they get, or even the task sequence they'll run. So there's tons of information inside this ZTI gather log that you guys can tell it during a deployment. Run ZTI gather, and then the next task will say, well, if you found that it is a laptop, which we can see up here, laptop is equal to true or false, desktop, is it a server, is it UEFI, is it on battery? So if it's a laptop and it's not plugged in, you can tell it to abort the OSD. Don't deploy an operating system because it might take too long. Power dies halfway through. So it's nice. This is one of the new features that came with the last version. So it's not 2013 version, but it is one version older, the is on battery. Kind of still new, but there's all kinds of information that you can key off of in here. Guys, I want to mention too, if you have questions, there's a microphone in the middle of the room there. If you wouldn't mind going over to the microphone, that way your question will get recorded because they're recording the session, and they asked me to ask you to go to the microphone. So I did it that time, guys. All right. Back to the slide deck. Information on some of the core deployment tools. Well, the assessment and deployment kit has replaced the automated installation kit. So the AIK, history. Now we've got the ADK. AIK is for deploying Windows 7. It supports older hardware. It is required for Configuration Manager 2007 if you're going to do OSDs, and you would want to integrate MDT 2012 Update 1 to deploy Windows 7. If you want to move into Windows 8, and I'm curious, how many of you are currently deploying Windows 8? That's a good number. Is anyone going 8.1? All right. Are you guys finding that there's no tools to actually help you with a lot of the tweaks? So we're having to go back to scripting a lot of the solution? kind of creating your own tools. There's not a lot of help out there yet for 8 and 8.1. With Windows 80K version 1, that'll help you deploy Windows 8. And it's set up for specific hardware requirements. You might think these are new, the NX, PAE, and SSE. These have been around forever. We just haven't talked about them too much. You couldn't even buy a machine today that doesn't support this hardware platform. Windows 80K for Windows 8 is required for Config Manager 2012 SP1 and integration of MDT 2012 Update 1. It includes WinPE version 4.0 and USMT version 5. The Windows 80K for 8.1, well, that's the latest version. And it's got all the new tools, bells and whistles in it. So it includes Windows PE 8.1 and USMT 6.3. I love that versioning number, 6.3. You know what's so nice about that? Is I know that 6.3 belongs to Windows 8.1 because that's the version of the OS. Some of the product teams at Microsoft had started standardizing and using the same version number as the OS. So then we know we're using the right tools. Instead of calling it version 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or you end up with two products named the exact same thing, and you have to make sure that you get the correct version. You don't know you have the right version like the Windows 80K. There's Windows 80K for Windows 8, version 1, and then version 2. Version 2 is for Windows 8.1. But you don't really know you're getting the latest and greatest until you open up the command prompt that comes with that. And then you can see version 6.2 or 6.3. Then you know what version you have. You can also look at date and timestamps on some of the tools that are inside, like USMT. Windows 80K for 8.1, you would want to integrate MDT 2013, the latest version, 2013, with Config Manager 2012 R2 for deploying Windows 8.1. Now, if we compare the Windows AIK to the ADK, you guys remember how long it took to download the AIK? That took forever, didn't it? It was a huge file. Everything was in it. Now with the ADK, it's a very, very quick download because there's nothing in it. You actually get the tools when you perform the installation. You don't have to. You could always run ADK setup and tell it to download the tools for you, and then you have the tools at any machines you want to go deploy them or install them on. You can just point to those installation files. So in the Windows AIK, we had version 3.x of WinPE, old versions of WinPE. USMT, version 4.0. Windows System Image Manager, I call this WSIM, hasn't changed. It's still big, ugly, and hard to use. That's why the tools are so nice and friendly. They ask you a few questions and just plug everything into your unattended XML scripts for you. Good old ImageX, the little tiny tool. Didn't do a lot for us, but it was pretty powerful. It would allow us to capture and apply images. ADK, latest, greatest version for 8.1. You get WinPE 5.0. I'll show you what that means here in just a couple minutes. You get USMT version 6.3. WSIM, that's still there. Deployment and Image Servicing Management, DISM. The DISM utility in this latest version actually can deprecate ImageX completely now. So there were about six switches, two of which were capture an image and apply an image. There were a few other switches like exporting and splitting a WIM that ImageX could do that DISM still could not. You know where DISM actually came from? DISM was a tool that was created because I think it's because the MVPs asked for it. Microsoft asked us at an MVP summit one time, why aren't people using these tools? They're free. What more can we do to help them deploy new OSs? And we told them it's because every one of the utilities, especially in the old days, are command line, and the syntax is completely different for every single one of them. Sometimes for a switch, you give it a dash. Sometimes it's a forward slant. Sometimes you can't give it anything or it breaks the whole command. So it was a full-time job to learn these deployment tools. And that's where Microsoft said, okay, we're going to make it easier. We're going to get rid of a few of these tools, like PEIMG, that allows you to inject drivers. Package Manager, anybody remember good old Package Manager? It allowed you to patch your images and put language packs in there. So did International Configuration. So those three command line utilities, they got rid of those, brought in DISM. DISM's an awesome tool, but it's got long commands to type out, and they put these hyphens in the strangest places so you can never remember, where did that hyphen go? I want to mount a WIM, so where do I put the hyphen? I'm going to show you what I'm talking about with DISM. On my deployment server, if I launch the correct command prompt, then, didn't want to open you. I want to show you the difference between a normal command prompt and the one that ships with the ADK. A normal everyday command prompt. Let's just see what the help file looks like on image X. Doesn't know what that is. Open up the deployment tools command prompt. Image X, what can I do with it? It knows exactly where the tools reside. The nice thing about this command prompt is under the hood, it changes the path statement in your environment variables. So you don't have that big, ugly, long path that you have to change directories into or put in front of every single command. So this command prompt's a little bit easier to play around with the tools. If we take a look at what DISM can do for us, cruise back up to the top. We see this is DISM version 6.3. And there's a few things it can do. Get mounted WIM image info. It can mount, unmount images. Notice the hyphens. That's very confusing because you use DISM like once every 6 months. You'll use it for a few days, and then you don't touch it for months and months and months. And then when you come back to use it again, you have to start all over again. It's like you don't even want to start doing it because you know what a nightmare it's going to be. So I always say create a cheat sheet. Every time you run DISM commands, you're going to run the same commands. So just when you're doing the commands, create a cheat sheet while you're doing it. And then store it on the server. Open that text file, and then just copy, paste, copy, paste, copy, paste, and you're done. It's no longer a, oh, I've got to go learn that all over again. So these are just a few little things we can do, and I'll show you my DISM cheat sheet. It's the same commands every single time I run them. So if I wanted to get some information on a WIM image, I can just copy this guy. First, I'm going to go see if it's still in the same place, because I'm not sure if I moved that or not. Let's see if that's even going to run. It should be on the E drive, in demos, and I did move it. So, let me change this path. Go to a deployment share. Here's our install WIM. Okay, let's see how that's going to look. And let's see if this will run. What's that? Do I have something wrong? Share operating system. Yeah? Let's see. It's a lot easier if we don't have the spaces. We'll paste it out. And, awesome. So we can get information on WIM images. Why is that important? Maybe you're not the one that created the WIM image. It's possible you don't know what's inside the image. And with some of the images, like with Windows 7, the image that ships on Microsoft's ISO or DVD, it actually has 5 images inside a single WIM file. So you might need to take a look at what image index is each one, It's just what number is it? And that way you know which one you want to export, which one you want to mount. If I wanted to mount an image, I'm going to grab that. Tell it DISM, mount the WIM. The WIM file resides in this path. Even if there's one image inside that WIM file, I still have to tell it the index number. So it's going to be index number one, and then the folder where I want to mount it to. It doesn't have to be named mount. You can name this folder anything you choose. It just has to be empty. That's all. So checking that, let's make sure I don't have anything previously mounted out there in that folder. Looks good. And I can grab it. Give it a couple seconds to mount the WIM image. There's all kinds of information and things that you can do to mounted WIMs. We've been able to do this for quite a while. But some of the fun stuff you can do, you can mount a WIM and patch it. That's patching it offline. It happens a lot faster than deploying the WIM, actually patching the machine, and then creating yet another image. So there's lots of cool things, and Config Manager even takes it one step further. With Config Manager, you can import OS images. You can right-click on that image and just tell it to update, and it will go to your internal WSUS server and update with your approved patches. Very, very quick. Nice stuff. You can also copy and paste. What kind of things would you want to copy and paste into your mounted WIM image? What about putting drivers in the driver store? Just open up the Windows folder, go to System 32, driver store, drop the drivers in there that you want to be injected or put in the driver store. These drivers are not installed, they're just in the driver store and available. What's cool about that is your end users don't have to be administrators to tell the driver to load if they plug in a piece of hardware. You have to be an admin to put something in the driver store. But if an admin has already put something in the driver store, you don't have to be an admin to invoke it or get it to fully install. We're almost there. If we open up the mount folder, this is what it looks like to have a mounted WIM image. There's all kinds of things I can do to this now. I can use DISM to do TCP/IP stack things. I can inject all kinds of applications. There's really tons of stuff you can do to a mounted WIM image. So this is making management of WIM images much easier than what we've had in the past. DISM can now actually export images. So if you have multiple WIMs inside a single WIM file, you can export one of those images out and then deploy just that portion. So you don't have to deploy the entire WIM. That's kind of nice. What happens if you have an image that's, let's say 15 gigs in size, and you want to put it on DVD? Easy? Not easy, but doable. There's a switch called Split WIM. So you can actually tell it, okay, I've got an image out here. Now I need to break that up, and I need the first one to be bootable. They need to be ISO format so I can just burn them to DVD. So you can run the split WIM on an existing WIM image, tell it the size you want to chunk it up in, and then you just copy that ISO over to the DVD when it's done. Piece of cake, nice. The deployment guys also have a blog out there where you can take all your applications. It's another route to go if you have to have multiple DVDs. You can take all your applications for a deployment, put them on one DVD, and then everything else needed for the deployment, operating system, drivers, patches, can go on a different DVD. So that kind of helps open it up and give you a little bit more space if you have to go with DVD. Most people just go with USB sticks. Much easier. And they're cheap nowadays. I'm not going to go through all of the DISM commands, but there is one that I want to show you. Who likes to do documentation? Oh, come on, some of you love documentation. I like it when the tools can document it for you. It takes you 10 seconds to do it. Go in, tell your boss it took you all weekend, got this really pretty report all configured. What I'm doing is asking it to dump out the drivers that are in this image. Is anybody using WDS, the Windows Deployment Service, as their only deployment solution? A couple of you. How do you know what drivers are injected into those images? This command line right here is phenomenal for that. Now, with WDS, what you have to do is you have to export the image out of WDS, use DISM to mount it, then dump your drivers to get a list of drivers. And to make it pretty, I always use this. So this is what you'll get your drivers listed like this. It's a little bit of information, but it's this big, long, scrolling list of a true WIM image out there that you've actually injected a bunch of drivers into. Not a pretty format. You can take that WDS OS WIM image, run this command on it, pipe it to a text file, and print it. There's your documentation for the drivers that are in that in the WIM itself. And then if you haven't made any changes to that WIM image, there's no reason to import it back into WDS. So the image that's there can just stay. If you make changes to that image, then you would need to re-import it back into WDS again. But those are just a few of the DISM commands. I'm not going to spend a lot more time on that. But it now can fully deprecate ImageX. A couple things we didn't talk about. Application Compatibility Toolkit. Well, this is part of the ADK. This tool's been around for a long time. And one of the nice things about ACT is it allows you to have a central location for all of your application information. Who's looked at Config Manager reports, 2007 or 2012, to see what applications you have in your environment? So you get 47 EXEs listed for Office. And you don't know which of the 47 belong to Office and which belong to AutoCAD and all these other products that are out there. The cool thing with ACT is it tells you that Office is installed. It doesn't spit out all those 47 executables at you. So it's a much cleaner list, and it gives you a place where you can go in and actually put statuses of the applications, because you're going to have people testing applications to see if they run on Windows 8 or 8.1. Well, where are you in the testing phase? Do you have testers? Have they started testing? Have they completed testing? What's the finding? Does it work 100% with Windows 8.1? Does it work 90%? Are there certain things that it won't do at all? Like launch because the logged on user is not a local admin. Well, the most power that you get out of ACT is it has a whole bunch of shims, hundreds of shims built into it. So there's no reason for you to try to figure out how to make applications do things they're not meant to do. Just get the shim out of ACT, like the UAC shim. It's really just a little programmatic lie to the application. So you've got an application that, in order for the user to run it, they have to be a local admin, but they're not. They're a standard user. The UAC shim would actually lie to the application when it's launched and tell the application, yeah, they're a local admin, sure they are, and then it runs just fine. But there's tons of shims that are built into ACT. So don't waste your time testing and trying to figure out how to get applications to run properly. The easiest thing to do is ACT is a free tool. Just install ACT, have it run out, look at install agents, I'm sorry, but it does come with an agent you have to install on the client machines, gathers information from it, all the applications that are there, drivers as well, and then dumps it into a SQL database. So now you have that central repository of all the applications that are running in your environment and a much cleaner list. You can also go in and set up priorities. This application is mission critical. This one's nice to have. This one, it doesn't really matter. So you can go in and keep track of where you are in application testing and at what level the priority should be of the applications. Fantastic tool. Volume Activation Management Tool. How many enterprise clients do we have? Enterprise clients. Not that many. Okay, there's a lot more there. Enterprise clients. Out of you guys, who's doing internal KMS activations? Out of those hands, how many are running VAMPed? 3, 4. That's usually what I get. This is one of the coolest tools I've ever seen. It allows you to get a picture of your client activations just from glancing at a GUI screen. You look at the screen, you don't see any red, everything's happy. You look at the screen, you see a lot of circles with red X's through them. You got a bunch of clients that are either out of their activation period or they're about to be out of their activation period. So because KMS activates, I think the default is like every 7 days, your internal clients activate to KMS every 7 days. This is a tool that will help you keep track of, am I really out of time? I can't be. You're flashing zeros at me. I'm like, wait a second, I have more to say. Okay. So I'm going to go to 10:30. And I won't look at that anymore. The Windows Performance Toolkit, I already talked a little bit about that, and that allows you just to look at machines and find out, well, what's it doing during this? And fill in the blank for this. You've got different drop-downs you can choose. This might be boot. What's happening during the boot? What's happening when I do large file copies? There's all kinds of things that you can measure with the tools, and then pull it up in nice pie charts, bar graphs. It's all pretty and easy to read. The WinPE5.0, scratch space, that's been changed. So in the past, we got 32 megs of scratch space. And if you're not familiar with what scratch space is, that's a little area of RAM where drivers and applications put things during installations. What we found is there's a lot of applications and drivers that need more scratch space, or they load faster if they have a larger area of scratch space. So you can increase that. Microsoft realized a lot of people are increasing this now. Why don't we just increase it by default? So if your machine has 1 gig or more of RAM, your scratch space would be 512 megs. If it has less, you're still at the 32, but you can change that from a drop-down list in either MDT or Config Manager. Previously, only 128 gigs of RAM were supported. Now we've got up to 4 terabytes. Love to have that on this laptop with 64-bit. 32. You're still going to have 64 gigs as the max supported. Profiling support has been removed. Now, this is a feature I never, ever used. What it allowed you to do was create the smallest possible WinPE. That WinPE would then be specific to a model of computer. Who wants a whole bunch of WinPEs based on all the different models of machines that you have? So I don't really know anyone who used profiling. WinPEs are pretty small to start with. No reason to make them even smaller. And then you've got to have multiple ones. So it's nicer to have one a little bit bigger, and it can boot any model of machine. The other thing that profiling did, it kind of seals the WinPE, so you can't do anything else to it. You can't inject other drivers. You kind of locked it up and threw away the key. So profiling I've never really used, and it's gone now. I think I might not be the only one that didn't use it. In WinPE 4.0, some capabilities that we got. .NET Framework, finally. I know MVPs were asking for this for years because in your WinPE, there might be applications you want to inject, but the applications themselves require .NET Framework to work. When we originally asked for that, they said, nope, absolutely not, because we're trying to keep WinPE small. And the .NET Framework is too big. It's going to make it bloated. And you're going to have to go to DVD instead of CD, but everybody's using USBs anyway, so it doesn't matter. We got .NET Framework, finally. BitLocker pre-provisioning. Well, when you BitLocker a machine during the operating system deployment, the user is usually having to wait 2, maybe 3 hours for BitLocker to actually complete. Now what pre-provisioning does is it actually BitLockers the drive before you put anything on it. That's like step one. And then as data is put on it, it's BitLockered. So it happens a lot faster. It happens like that. This table is all about which OSs support which portion of USMT. USMT has two executables, scan state. That's the one that scans all the data. Set all your settings, application settings, IE favorites, puts it on a server. Then you have load state that runs. So what this table is doing is talking about, if you're going from a Windows XP machine to Windows XP, you want to use USMT version 3, because that's fully supported. As you come down the line, XP to Vista or XP to Windows 7, you can see the versions are changing. XP to Windows 8, version USMT 5 to Windows 8.1, well, that's not supported. And it actually won't even load the data. So whether scan state runs or load state runs is dependent upon the supported OSs. And neither scan state or load state will run on a server OS. It's not really like you have a lot of data and settings on a server anyway, so you probably don't need it. But if you attempt to run scan state on a server, you get an error message that says it's not supported on that operating system. So I'm not going to go through this whole table. Just wanted you guys to see kind of where you are for what products you're moving from and to, and the version of USMT that you should be using for that. The deployment image servicing and managing. A little bit more information on DISM. What we have is exporting the compressed recovery image. We have a new switch that allows us to do that. We also have this little folder that contains a lot of hot fixes and updates. It's the SXS folder. So what happens when you install a hotfix? And then you install a roll-up later on, hotfix comes out, or a patch comes out that has that hotfix in it, but it's a later version. So now you have that twice. Over a period of a year, you might have the same hotfix in there, 2, 3, 4 different places. So this SXS folder keeps growing and growing and growing because it never gets cleaned up. So the way to clean it up is to run the start component cleanup switch, DISM start component cleanup. That will go in and it gets rid of the, not the original version, not the latest version, but everything in between. So if there are redundant hotfixes or updates in there, it will get rid of the ones in the middle. If you don't care if you keep the original, you can actually run the reset base and that will delete the original out of that folder. If you run this on your master WIM image, then you're going to be able to greatly reduce the size of that image itself. So you don't need all those updates in there. New features from Windows 8. It says that DISM was deprecated. If you open it's easier just to show you. If I go into one of the deployment shares for MDT, open my scripts folder, pop down to ZTI backup WSF, this is a script that runs if you tell it to capture an image or create a backup of a machine prior to laying the OS down. If I come in here and I say, what command is actually running? I look for image X, look at this. Backing up a computer using image X. If you go down and actually look at the command, it's image X over here. It is not DISM that's being run. So the scripts that run for MDT and Config Manager, even though Microsoft says image X is deprecated, they're still using image X to generate images. So it hasn't fully been deprecated yet. But it could be because it now has all the support for switches that image X had. The performance toolkit, information that you can capture. And it'd be nice if this was just a little bit bigger so you guys can actually see that. Little snapshot of the kinds of information that you'll get. So you've got a machine that's not booting properly. You'd have to install this utility on that machine and then tell it that you want it to measure the boot process. And then you get all kinds of information about memory, power, storage, and you get these nice little bar graphs out to the side. And this is where you could just go to one machine that's working properly, run the tool there, go to the machine that's not running the way you want it to, run the tool there, and then just compare the pictures and see exactly where the issue is. It might be slow boot. It might be group policy processing delays, application performance issues. But it's really easy if you have a picture of a good one, and then the one that's not so good, it's easy to compare those two very quickly and determine what area you need to start your troubleshooting in. The two main tools. Anyone who's used XPerf and XBoot MGR. You will be very comfortable with these tools because this is just the latest version of them, and they've been renamed. So now it's going to be called Windows Performance Recorder to capture the information. To display it, it's the Windows Performance Analyzer, and that's what we're running right here that displays the data. The analyzer used to be called XPerf View. The assessment tools. You can do a lot of testing with the assessment tools. Get different kinds of metrics to determine if the machine is running optimally. You can run it in lab environments to test new applications and things for installation and to see if they're running properly. Expected scenario, create your master image and then deploy to each supported computer model. Then you can run the assessment analyzer and take a look at the same data on different models of machines to make sure that everything's running properly. You may be very surprised to find that certain models of machines don't run it quite as fast as other models of machines. BitLocker enhancements. This is all about pre-provisioning and the fact that it BitLockers before you even put the OS down now. So it's just a lot faster. Don't have to wait for the encryption to actually occur. The automatic network, you can set it up for what you can do with locking and unlocking on trusted networks. So now with BitLocker, standard users can reset the pins. You can set it to allow them on a trusted network not to require a pin. On an untrusted network, they would have to require a pin. So you can set BitLocker up for different scenarios for your users now, which is kind of nice. Different for them at home versus at work. UEFI, Intel's replacement for the PC BIOS. UEFI, I don't think you can buy a machine today that's not UEFI. If you are buying a machine that's not UEFI, they're probably like cleaning out the warehouse or something, and you got a great deal on that. Because every machine I'm seeing is all UEFI. And one of the nice things about UEFI is the deployment tools now support, if they see that the model of machine is UEFI, they will automatically format the drive with the correct partitions. So there's a new partition type out there, the MSR, that's required for UEFI partitions. If you're deploying the same task sequence in MDT or Config Manager to a machine that is not UEFI, then it notices that from the ZTI gather log, and it will format the normal just three partitions or whatever you've set in the task sequence. If you decide you just want two partitions or you don't even want the Windows recovery environment, you could tell it just to do one partition. But the scripts are smart enough to look into that ZTI gather to see if a machine is UEFI capable. And then based on that, it keys off the partitioning schematics. What we get that's new with UEFI is a GUID partition table. The type of disk is a GPT versus an MBR. The master boot record disks, we've had forever. That's what we've always dealt with. MBRs, limitation, 4 partitions per drive. And I think you get up to like 2.4 terabytes for some reason is sticking in my mind for the amount of space or size that a partition could be. With GPT, now I did say you can only have 4 partitions. You could have 3 primaries, 1 extended, chunk it up into logicals if you needed more partitions than that. So there was a way to get around it with MBR. With GPT, there's actually no limit to the number of partitions you can have on a drive. Microsoft implementation of UEFI put a limit on it of 128. That's still a lot of partitions for one drive. So you can have up to 128 partitions with UEFI. You can also have up to 9.4 zettabytes. That could be the max size of one of your partitions. That's a lot of space. So it really does open up for a lot of additional hard drive space. UEFI machines do require a FAT32 partition to boot. You want to make sure you don't do everything in TFS when you're setting up your media. And when we say media, I'm talking about the standalone media that you use for deployments, something you'd put on a USB stick. You want to make sure that you would have multiple partitions on the USB stick so your WinPE resides in the FAT32 partition. Then you can put your OS image in the NTFS partition. For a machine to be or to get the Windows 8 logo on it, there are some requirements it has to meet. It has to be supported to UEFI 2.3.1 level. It has to do the post, that power on self test, in right around 2 seconds. It has to be very, very fast. And if it's doing a fast post, it's going to end up doing a faster boot. So that's why one of the reasons the requirement is out there is our Win 8.1 machines, those guys restart like nothing. Very, very fast. And they should be able to support Pixie. Okay. So a UEFI machine, sure, it can support a Pixie boot, but a lot of the dongles that you get can't. So a lot of these machines, the little tablets and all the nice little tiny machines, or the ones you rip the tablet off the top and walk around with, they end up with just a bunch of USB ports on them. So you have to get dongles for network cables, dongles to hook it into projectors, dongles for everything. So if you do get dongles and you're going to do a Pixie boot, you need to make sure that you test the Pixie boot with the dongle that you get, because some dongles are not capable of Pixie booting. So you need to be very careful about making sure if you're going to do Pixie booting in your environment, make sure you purchase a dongle that's Pixie boot capable. I've run into many scenarios where there are certain dongles that won't Pixie boot no matter what you do to them. No cross-platform deployments. So in the past, we could boot a 32-bit WinPE and then deploy a 32-bit OS or a 64-bit OS. Could do that all day. Boot a 64-bit WinPE, the only thing you can do is put a 64-bit OS on it. When you start talking about UEFI, we can't really do that anymore. So what we need to do is, if you have a 32-bit machine, you have to boot 32-bit. If you have a 64, you have to boot a 64-bit. And then you have to put the appropriate OS on it. Of course, what else could you do? So UEFI kind of locks that down a little bit. The secure boot. Secure boot is an awesome feature. You go in, you turn it on in UEFI. Very simple to turn on. But then it makes it very secure. In fact, so secure that you can't even Pixie boot the machine, dependent upon the machine. So what we did encounter is issues with Pixie boot, UEFI, and secure boot. So if you find that you've turned the machine on, you've enabled secure boot, and then you're not able to Pixie, there's really not a lot you can do about it. So you have to test on a model of machine before you go buy 4,000 of them if Pixie is a requirement in your environment. So we found that lots of the different model types that we've been playing around with the last two deployments I've done, some of them, secure boot turned on, you can't Pixie boot. Or some really strange things that were happening is it would look at the machine and see that it's UEFI. I could see that in a ZTI gather log. And then it would ignore the fact that it found UEFI, and it would format the 3 partitions instead of 4. And then it would fail halfway through the deployment. We took that down to specific types of dongles as well, and I'm not sure what was going on with those dongles, but we had, at the end of that, the first deployment we did, we had about 70 dongles that were in a pile, and we're like, those dongles don't work. So now we know the model of dongle we have to use so that we don't have to constantly go into Config Manager and delete out the MAC address of the dongle every time you plug it into a different machine. Because what was happening is the dongle has the MAC address in it, of course. The MAC address gets assigned to that computer. Then you do an OSD deployment. We would take that dongle, plug it into another machine, same MAC address, and then run Config Manager, boot it up, and we would get failed to find task sequence. Like, okay, so we'd have to go into Config Manager, run reports, grab the MAC address, type it in, find the name of the machine, go into Devices, delete the machine. Now, restart the machine, comes up, runs the OSD just fine. So there's all kinds of fun little things that UEFI, Secure Boot, and the wonderful dongles are going to present for you guys. Windows 8 and 8.1 deployments. Windows Store apps. Well, we can grab apps from the store. You can sideload apps. There's lots of fun things we can do with applications now. Application catalog. So depending upon how you create your application and what you deploy it to, whether you deploy it to users or computers, will determine where that application shows up for the user. Do you want the application to show up in Software Center like we've always seen with Configuration Manager? Do you want the application to show up in the application catalog? So it's all dependent upon how you actually deploy the application as to where it's going to show up. If you deploy it to a device, of course you're going to see that in Software Center. If you deploy it to a user, you'll see it in the application catalog. Because a computer could never by itself open the application catalog and start choosing applications to install, but a user could. And has anybody actually seen or played with the company portal yet? Anybody? Nobody. One person all the way in the back, too. It's really easy to set up, and it looks like you're at a Windows store, but it's the applications that you've put in there, and they're displayed as tiles. So that's a third way that you can have your applications displayed to your users so they can choose applications you've put in Config Manager to deploy to their local machines. And one of the nice things, if you haven't played with the application catalog yet, one of the things you can do in there is set applications to require approval. Maybe you have applications like AutoCAD. I know that costs around $4,500. That's an expensive application. You wouldn't want just any users out there installing it to see what the application does. So for approval, what you would do is the user would click on the application in the catalog, and then a dialog box opens up and says, why do you think you need this application? And so they have to type in why they think they need the application. Then, and this is kind of where they left us sitting. They just kind of got us halfway there and said, we're not going to finish it. I hope they do in a later version of Config Manager. Because nobody ever finds out that somebody has requested approval of an application. They don't get notified in any way. So you have to kind of know, okay, well, Cindy, I need for you to go in and request approval for the application and tell me when you've done it. So Cindy fills out the information, why I want the application. And she sends that in. Then a human being has to come in to approval requests. You would have a list of requests that are in here. You simply right-click and say approve or reject. But someone has to come in here and do this. Which takes me down the path of one of my favorite projects I'm playing with right now is Orchestrator. Has anyone started playing with Orchestrator and Runbooks? A couple of you? You can actually include in MDT task sequences as well as Config Manager, Orchestrator Runbooks. Runbooks allow you to do tons of things. You can maneuver objects in Active Directory. You can do pretty much anything you want with a runbook. And the cool thing about your runbooks is there are all kinds of plugins that you can get that already have runbooks predefined, so you don't even have to create them. Runbooks for Exchange, Active Directory, Config Manager, there's tons of runbooks that you can get out there. A lot of them are free. Some of them cost money. But runbooks are awesome. They kind of get rid of the need to have to write something in a specific language for a specific product. And there are runbooks for products that aren't Microsoft. There's tons of things you can get out there. So I would like to set up, what I'm trying to figure out now, is how I can, whenever an approval request comes in, I want an email generated to be sent to someone. So they know, oh, look, I've got to go to Config Manager and approve or reject that. So Runbooks, I think, is going to be the way to go. There are some other ways to set this up. There's about a 46-page white paper on some additional tools that you can install and set it up so that when a request comes in, an email is sent. It's really, really ugly, though. There's a lot of steps you have to go through and a lot of things to install. All right, refreshing and resetting the PC. So the successor to the Windows recovery environment. We've got some new recovery options here. To reset your PC, it's going to remove all the personal data, apps, and settings from the PC, and then it reinstalls Windows. Reinstalling the OS from an image, and a lot of companies nowadays are keeping a compressed version of the WIM image on every local machine. so that you can just load it up locally. You don't have to go anywhere and download it. That's great as long as you have the hard drive space. Now, if it is compressed, it's a lot smaller. You could get it down to 2, maybe 3 gigs in size, and then just allow these tools to uncompress it whenever they need it to reinstall. One problem that I've seen in a lot of places is going to SSD drives. They're smaller. So even taking 3 or 4 gigs to store the image, they end up with issues because they only have 250 gigs to start with, and users have more data than that. So a lot of companies, when they are downsizing, going to faster, smaller SSD drives, then it makes them take into account putting the user's data someplace else. Then you'd have space for your WIM image. With slates and tablets, deployment challenges. I have one client called me up and said, okay, we're going to do, 4,000 machines, and we want to do them in like 1 week. And we don't want to have to get out keyboards or monitors. We just want to grab these CPUs, pull them out, put in a network cable, and go. So those are kind of the issues that you're running into with a lot of these new slates and tablets. A lot of people want to do deployments differently than they have in the past. What we actually ended up with was automating that client. And as the machines came in, they just scanned the MAC address of every single machine. Then they put the MAC addresses in the custom settings INI and told it which task sequence to run. Then we fully automated the task sequence. So all they had to do, one more step, we actually used MDT, not even Config Manager, took the MDT WinPE and put it on a WDS server. So everything could be automatically booted. The WinPE comes down, it boots up. Inside the MDT WinPE is a bootstrap INI file that automatically connects you to the deployment server and the deployment share. And then it kicks off lighttouch.vbs. Lighttouch.vbs runs a ZTI gather, looks at that machine, gets the MAC address, looks in the custom settings INI. Oh, I'm supposed to run this task sequence. Runs that task sequence, completes the deployment. No keyboard, no monitor, really, really fast. So there are ways to get around some of the problems that we're encountering because we have these small machines and possibly just USB ports, nothing else. For disk partitioning, I like disk part. Does anybody remember FDisk? Am I the only one? I loved FDisk too. That was a good tool. We got disk part, and at first I didn't like disk part. Now we're getting rid of disk part and actually doing PowerShell commandlets for partitioning. You can still use disk part for now, but eventually it will be fully deprecated. Roles and features. So DISM can actually enable features in your WIM images. That's nice, one of the new things it can do. Also, when we look at these tools, show you the deployment workbench. This is something you can add to your task sequence. So if we open up our task sequence, go to the task sequence tab, and then let's say down in the post install, I'm going to add. And if you haven't seen these before, this is how you can just add additional settings in here. You can run command lines, PowerShell scripts. You could input Orchestrator runbooks as a task in your task sequences. Same thing in Config Manager. And what I'm looking for is going to be install roles and features. Then I can just come over here in my task and just tell it, yeah, I'm going to put a couple of these guys in. And then I could go to my custom settings INI if I wanted to and tell it to skip roles and features page. Just do what I've set in the task sequence. Don't display the page to me and ask me to select what I want to do. I've already done that. If you want to add this and not make any selections, as soon as you add this to a task sequence, then the scripts are smart enough to show you that page during deployment. And if you wanted to, you could. The deployment could be different from one machine to the next. And on one machine, you could go down and make a certain set of selections and then a different set of selections on another one. So if you want to see that page, you could, but you don't have to. So there's all kinds of settings that we can add as just a task to install roles and features. You can also do that with DISM and inject the roles and features directly into your WIM images. MDT 2013. This is the tool you need to use to deploy Windows 8.1. MDT 2012 Update 1, you can do Windows 7 all day long, no problem. Windows 8, but you've got to go change the Windows AIK to the Windows 80K version 1 for 8, version 2 for 8.1. So I had someone ask in the last session, what happens if I need to deploy Windows 7 and Windows 8? You go with the latest version. So if you need to deploy Windows 8, you're going to use Windows 80K version 1 for Windows 8. That can also deploy Windows 7. If you needed to do 8.1, you've got to go with the latest tools for 8.1, but they're all backward compatible with 7. What we're starting to lose support for? XP, because XP is dead now. So a lot of the tools no longer run. They're not supported, or they physically won't run on XP machines, like scan state and load state, the latest versions of that. You can do a scan state. You can get your data off that XP machine, because that's what they want you to do. Get it off. Wipe the machine clean. Put 8.1 on it. Now, you can bring the data back down. But you couldn't take data now with the latest version of USMT 6.3. You can't take it from an XP machine and run load state to put it back. Not supported, won't even run. Talked about most of this. We know XP, Vista, should be decremented. The Windows 8 functionality from MDT 2012 Update 1, what we got from that was the provisioning of Windows 8 applications, BitLocker pre-provisioning, the installation of roles and features, and I showed you, did I show you the partitioning scheme? Or was that the last session that I did in the task sequence? I don't think I showed you. It'll take just a sec. But what's nice is under the hood, the scripts. And I think it's going to be better to show it in the task sequence in Config Manager. So if I pop back over here, open up my task sequence. You'll see that there's going to be a few different partitioning schemes. And they're going to be based off of whether it's a new machine or it's a machine that currently has an operating system on it. So if we come down here, we can take a look at partition if necessary. If it knows it's a UEFI machine, the scripts automatically look in the ZTI gather and say, yeah, this is UEFI. So I'm going to go ahead and do the UEFI partitioning. And this is the default UEFI partitions that are set up, the WinRE, EFI, MSR, and the OS disk, where your operating system is going to physically reside. If it's not a UEFI machine, based on what it found in the ZTI gather log, then it's just going to format OS disk. But you can also have it set up to do an active partition for OS disk and then do the WinRE as well. In MDT, that's just a check mark in a box. You will get both of those partitions by default with Config Manager. And you can come in and change these. You can set these partitioning schemes up to anything you choose for them to be. If you need to add partitions, you won't break any of the tasks by editing these. Config Manager 2012 adds support for Windows 8.1. And let me tell you, if you're running Config Manager 2012 SP1 and you attempt to do Windows 8.1 deployments, you will have the strangest results. They'll be all over the board. You never get the same desired result. You constantly are having task sequences that fail in different places. And the problem is the underlying tools don't know what to do. DISM is a kind of strange animal. DISM is used a lot with the deployment tools and in the scripts, not to capture or apply an image, but for a lot of other reasons. What DISM does, it actually goes inside the image itself, and it uses the version of DISM that resides inside the image. So even though I'm possibly on a server 2012 OS, I'm not using DISM from that server. When I run DISM, it actually goes inside the image itself, and it will use the version of DISM that is inside the image. So DISM, same machine. I'm on server 2012. I run DISM against a Windows 7 image. I'm going to have different options for DISM to run on Windows 7 than I will Windows 8 and 8.1. And it's because it's going inside the image and using DISM. It's inside that WIM file. Kind of a strange thing, because you think you're using DISM on the 2012 server, and it should act the same way with any image, but you're not. From Windows 8 functionality, we got installation of Windows 8 applications, BitLocker pre-provisioning, and good old UEFI support now. That's an old slide. That was about the session today. So, what we covered. I think we hit everything that we had planned on covering. We talked about new image size and speed. What's new with the core deployment tools? The difference between Windows AIK and ADK, and broke down the ADK, a couple versions there. WinPE 5.0, the new features we got in that. USMT, what can run on which operating system. Performance Toolkit, talked about the assessment tools. New features of pre-provisioning with BitLocker. GPT and Secure Boot with UEFI. And the last thing we talked about were the new enhancements to MDT 2013. Not a lot of new bells and whistles. Mainly it's the ADK underlying tools that have all the new bells and whistles. And then we talked a little bit about Config Manager 2012 R2. Does anybody have any questions? No? Well, I finished about 2 minutes early. So, guys, thanks a lot for coming to the session. I really appreciate that, and I hope you enjoy the rest of the conference. Have a good day. Thank you.